If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast, the Abu Dhabi race review with your usual host, myself, Hayden Gullis, and James Coker. And before we get in today, everybody, give yourself a round of applause because we made it. 24 race weekends, we did it. And now we get 100 days off. But before we enjoy our respite, before we enjoy our break, we've got what I think was quite an interesting Abu Dhabi Grand Prix to dive into, to pick bits out of, and to talk about it. And for me, I thought it was maybe not a all-time classic, but it wasn't a bore fest. But it wasn't like an average race either. I thought it was interesting enough to kind of keep you hooked throughout the whole race and not wanting to check your phone, but nothing that was keeping you on the edge of your seat for the entire race. But, you know, I think a very good Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. A lot of storylines to wrap up, and I think they were wrapped up very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all deserve a patch or a t-shirt or a coffee mug that says, I survived the 2024 Formula One calendar. I think a good video that kind of encapsulates how everybody feels about a 24 race season is, and I don't think they did it intentionally, I think it was an accident, but F1 on their own socials posted a video where the drivers were entering the paddock in Abu Dhabi, and they asked all of the drivers and team principals and some other personalities describe the season in one word.
Yeah.
And most of the responses from the drivers was like some sort of guttural noise, like a groan or a sigh, and them going long.
Yeah.
Or beat out. Yeah. I think Yuki wanted to say shit, but he didn't want to get in trouble for saying shit. He said something along the lines like, I don't think I could say the word because you're going to bleep it out.
Yeah.
But like, I think we all collectively, while this has been an incredible season, are like kind of worn down. Even as a fan, for me, this is a long, long season. I imagine it's really hard on the drivers, but especially hard on the teams that are the people that are turning the lights on and turning them off at the end of the day. First people in there, last people to leave.
Yeah.
Being away from their families. I think about what a long year this must have been for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think some people from the outside, not everybody, I think this is just a small group of people, but they believe that, you know, it's just a race weekend. So it's just 3 days you're working, but no, you're also there for Thursday and also possibly there Monday as well. And I think the weekend really of the starting up can begin from Wednesday. But then it's also the fact that they then fly back and it's their job too. So they could also be in the office on the Monday or on the Tuesday. And they're very full-on weeks, so there's not a lot of time for respite. You're thinking about half the year, 24 race weekends. And then, of course, the rest of the year isn't just, okay, well, they've got you know, 24 other weekends plus to chill, which is, yeah, true on the weekends. But then the weekdays, of course, they're back into the team offices and the team factories, you know, working and progressing to try and build the cars. So it is a very long season for these people. And I think, you know, round of applause to them a lot as well, because it's an incredible job, and I think they can all be incredibly proud of themselves, no matter where they are in the tables, because it is a long, grueling season, and I hope that we don't have more than 24 races. I think 24 is way over the limit. I think we both agreed that 19, for both of us, is sort of like the maximum of what F1 should be doing, and maybe we'll get there in the future with the indication of tracks rotating in the calendar, but yeah, I think a lot of them will be happy to see the end of it. We'll enjoy the Christmas period because, of course, there'll be a winter lockdown. But then a lot of other people as well will be excited to carry on the momentum that they are taking from this last triple header into, of course, next season.
Yeah, absolutely. But getting into the race, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix at the Yas Marina Circuit, broad strokes, I agree with you, Hayden, that I thought this was a pretty solid race. A lot of action on the first lap, some emotional Formula One farewells for drivers like Zhou Guanyu, Valtteri Bottas, Kevin Magnussen. Some emotional team farewells for drivers like Lewis Hamilton and Carlos Sainz. We'll get more into that later. But I think there was a lot of action up front in the race. And then I think a lot of what kept me interested were the human element, like the stories behind the race and the stakes that were happening. Like, of course, you had the constructors battle between Lando, Oscar, McLaren, and Ferrari with Charles and Carlos. But you also had Lewis dealing with the emotions of this being his last race at Mercedes after 12 years. And I think that all of those sort of storylines, and I know a lot of OG sports fans don't like to think about story in sport. They just want to focus on the sport. But like, I feel like these storylines and the human element of motorsport is what makes it so compelling and interesting. And I think that's what made this race so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I fully agree, because otherwise what would be the point of having people take part in the sports? You've got the AI racing that they're starting to test and trying to perfect. And I think, you know, it massively loses that element because you don't have those, you know, bitter rivalries or you know, from this weekend, we had George and Max going at each other. Yeah, okay, everything seems fine now after the race weekend. And I'm sure, you know, they're just people that can easily just put things to a side and be like, do you know what? It really isn't actually that deep. So, yeah, let's just carry on as normal. And you'd lose those elements. You lose that result of, you know, Lando and McLaren, that you know, celebration after a race weekend, because you wouldn't get that from a driver jumping out the car. Lewis Hamilton getting out of his Mercedes at the end of the Grand Prix, you know, breaking down and sort of, you know, being on the floor, you know, crouching down next to his car, saying goodbye. You wouldn't get that. So that's why I think sport is so incredibly amazing, that you have this, you have these storylines as well. You have this rise and fall. And I think for a lot of people at the top, they forget how easy sometimes it is that you can just drop off and you can not come back depending on certain scenarios that are around you. But then when you get those moments again, it's incredible and amazing. And I think, you know, we are both people that like a little bit of small amount of domination in sport, because it allows for those storylines of those back markers and those underdog Scott stories to really come through. Like, look at this weekend and look at the Haas and the Alpine of Hulkenberg and Gasly having really strong results in the races. If it was a spec series, we'd be like, oh, okay, Gasly's doing a good job this weekend, but other weekends he's down there. Whereas because we know the cars aren't quite as good as the top cars, but they're finding their way up there in qualifying, it's like, damn, they pulled out an incredible lap and they're really having a good end to the season.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's jump into it. Let's first talk about quali. Q1 cutoff, we had sort of some usual suspects. Well, we had Jack Doohan in his first Formula One Grand Prix. You know, I don't think anybody expected him, especially in an Alpine, to blow anyone away or really be able to outperform the rest of the field. So, like, I feel like Q1 cutoff for him wasn't much of a surprise. We also had both Williams out and Zhou Guanyu out. But the shock Q1 exit was Lewis Hamilton. And, I think it partially was because on that outlap, he caught that bollard that Kevin Magnussen had knocked out of place and was dragging it under his car for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that mentally just sort of threw him off and he wasn't able to get sort of the car primed for the push lap, but also mentally wasn't able to get into the right place for his push lap.
It was on the push lap. He was actually up on the time that he needed to be up on. And it was going through the last sector. That's where he lost a lot of time, because of course the bollard is affecting the air intake for the floor, which of course these cars are very much relying on. So yeah, that's just absolutely ruined the whole qualifying. I don't think I've ever seen something like that before, where a bollard is so purposely thrown. And I think it needs to be asked the question, why are the bollards a thing? Do we need them? And I think that's a question posed to the drivers, because of course with these cars, with the size of the wheels, it might be difficult to see apexes, and the bollards are a good indication to say the apex is right here. I know that for Monaco, for example, the final corner, there's a little cone sticking up on the top of the anti-nose corner barrier because it kind of goes over a crest, so drivers can see that's where the apex of the corner is. I think Sebring as well is a great example through turn one, because it's a sort of late apex corner and you're very blind going through there, that you could sort of aim for a cone on the inside top railing as well. So maybe those bollards help with that, but if they don't, then at least for Formula One racing, there's no need for them to be there, because
or
one,
do they need
you
to break
your front wing on them, and two, as we saw, they can be thrown under a car.
Or do they need to be more flexible, where they like don't snap and break, and it's just a thing that like goes down and then flops back up?
Well, like one of those inflatable men with arms,
exactly, like that you see in front of car dealerships,
flapping about all the time. And we should
just
have it with each driver around each apex of the corner. I think,
why not?
We've once again, James, we fixed Formula One.
Or it could be like a beam. If it's a night race, it could be a beam of light, or it could be like a plume of smoke or something like that. Something that they run right over. But
yes.
Okay, so that was in his push lap. That was devastating to see Hamilton go out in Q1, especially being it's his last race for the Silver Arrows. Q2, we had a time deleted for Charles Leclerc. And he gets knocked out of Q2. Other drivers eliminated from Q2 were both RBs and Tsunoda and Lawson, Stroll and Kevin Magnussen. We then saw an incredible lap from Valtteri Bottas to get into Q3. That was, I thought that was like a nice kind of swan song for him. And I loved him coming on the radio being like, that's as fast as she's going to go.
Yeah. I also heard from... So they were talking about the dinner that they had over the course of the weekend of all the drivers getting together, and Valtteri Bottas, of course, picked up the bill. And he said that, you know, someone asked him like, oh, you know, how do you feel about picking up the bill? And he's like, happily do it. I got a lot of toes in qualifying, which I think was because of it. So yeah, it's just a funny thought to me that all the drivers see Bottas in the mirrors and like, okay, do you know what? Let's give him a good toe, a good qualifying session after picking up the bill.
Yeah, and also I heard that George and Max were on opposite sides of the table at that dinner.
Yeah, but there was a seat spare. There were two seats spare when he walked in, and they were both either side of Max, and apparently Max was just like, oh, George, come sit down. And George picked up the chair and moved it next to Lewis.
Oh, my gosh, that's so funny. Then in Q3, we had that very, very brief moment where Nico Hülkenberg was at provisional pole for 30 seconds with 30 seconds left. And I was like, stop the count. This is the grid's been set. Nico's finally going to get his podium. But, of course, that did not last very long. It was an exciting Q3. We had McLaren with the front row lockout, Carlos Sainz P3, Nico Hülkenberg P4. He would then get a 3-place grid penalty for failing to follow race director's instructions by overtaking two cars in the pit exit row. We had Max P5 and Pierre P6. Did you look into at all like that Hülkenberg penalty? Can you like expand on that at all?
So I believe it was for overtaking on the pit exit. There was two things that was pulled up on Anthony Davidson's Skypad, and it was first of all stopping in the pit lane because there was a car in front going slowly, which was something that they were unsure whether it was that one. But then he also, on a different occasion later on, I think in qualifying, overtook a car going slowly coming out of the pit lane exit. So I'm not sure which one he got dinged for, but was one of those two.
Got it. But our starting grid was set. We had McLaren with the front row lockout, Lando P1, Oscar P2, Carlos P3, Max P4. He and Gasly and Russell all got bumped up due to that Hülkenberg penalty. So we had Max P4, Pierre Gasly P5, George Russell P6, then Hülkenberg at P7, Fernando Alonso, the pride of Asturias, at P8, Valtteri Bottas P9, and Checo Perez P10. It was nice to see a Q3 appearance from Checo. You know, we all thought maybe he'd finish in the points for potentially his last race with Red Bull. We will then talk about how just a few laps into the race, that ended up not being the case. But to start the race, We had the entire field on mediums, with the exception of Lewis Hamilton, who optioned to start on the hards. The race starts, Hayden, and immediately on the first corner, we have Piastri and Max touch wheels and spin out. But what was interesting is they both spun out, and it was like the parting of the Red Sea. And
yeah,
they each went to one side of the track, and everybody just split them and went through. And luckily, there were no collisions. But I got to ask you, like, what do we think about this move for Max?
Yeah, I think it was an aggressive move. There was an open door slightly on the inside. He went for it. You know, it's Max's style, isn't it? He goes for those moves on the inside. He made the mistake and made contact. He wasn't ahead of the apex based on the rules that we have seen over the previous seasons. If you're ahead of the apex, it wouldn't have been an issue. He would have been allowed the right of the room, but he was behind. And when we say ahead of the apex, you have to physically be ahead. You can't just be like front wheel to rear wheel and you're alongside your allowed room. No, that's not how the rules work. You have to be ahead. And we've seen it so many other times where Max has defended so well using that. Couldn't get there ahead in time. And the little dink happened. Just an honest mistake. I think a lot of people are calling out being like, oh, this is why Max Verstappen is the worst wheel-to-wheel driver. We've all seen drivers make little mistakes like that where they just, you know, go for it. It's lap one. These things happen. Maybe slightly less grip than anticipated. Also was put on the inside curb. I think, you know, I've spoken before about my ideal wheel-to-wheel racing and what I would like, and it is a case of if you are front wheel to rear wheel, then I think you do warrant room. And I think Piastri could hold a tight enough line for Max on the inside to pinch him, but still get the drive off the outside without fully putting him on the curb. I think it wasn't helped by putting Max on the curb, therefore bouncing over the curb, losing traction, losing grip. And then, of course, causing the understeer to make that contact. But ultimately, Max was the driver behind, so therefore is at fault. And I think, rightfully deserved the 10-second time penalty. And he put his hands up, apparently going up to Oscar Piastri after the race and apologized for the incident.
That's great. Good for him. I do think like it was also a difference in mentalities, right? Because I know a lot of commentators said it was selfish or reckless because he had nothing to lose. Like, there were no stakes for Max in this race. He had already secured the Drivers' Championship. Red Bull was out of the running for the Constructors' title. So he had nothing to lose with, going into turn one, where Oscar had more stakes. And so maybe he had the mentality being like, okay, Oscar needs to, you know, in order to secure the Constructors' title, he needs to try to have a clean race. So I have nothing to lose. Maybe he'll back out of it. And he didn't. And they touched wheels and they spun out and he got the penalty. Right.
Yeah. I think, you know, there was a good point I think made from the Sky commentary that was sort of like one side being, why would you go for such a risky move when you haven't got anything to lose in that sort of situation? You know that, of course, McLaren are fighting with Ferrari for the constructors. Let them race and don't do anything where you're going to be taking out one of those drivers, because on the other hand, you probably wouldn't want that from someone else that isn't involved in any championship fight to make an overly aggressive move on you. But then on the other hand of things, you know, every race is a singularity, and I think we shouldn't on the same side of things say, oh, everybody just not fight with the McLarens and Ferraris and everybody just let them be 1-4, fight things out, and then everybody finishes behind them fifth downwards. No, of course. So, and certain drivers will have that mindset based on who they're friends with. For example, you know, if Max was going for the championship in a finale and someone, Lando, was going for a championship in a finale, you know, whoever are friends with each other would probably not fight that driver too hard if they haven't got anything to gain in that race. If it was an Alpine and a Haas, then maybe they'd fight it a little bit more because, of course, they're fighting for their own constructors' battle and to benefit their own team. But, you know, we've seen that in the past. I think notably 2012 season when Michael Schumacher famously pretty much waved Sebastian Vettel by as a good friend and a fellow German to go and try and win that 2012 championship after his setback. So it's not unusual. But, I think as fans of the sport, we always want to see racing regardless of what is going on. We don't want to see, you know, two teams sort of bubble wrapped and nothing happening to either of them. We want to see them race. We want to see them earn those championships.
But also, I mean, it's easy for us to sit here and armchair quarterback this stuff and talk about it in hindsight. But I think you are right in the sense that, like, we're probably overthinking it. And when they're on the track and they're racing, they're just thinking about the race in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know, especially at turn one, lap one.
Yeah.
Ayrton Senna famously said, if you're not a racing driver, if you don't go for a gap that's there. In all honesty, he did say that when he, to sort of cover up him taking out Alain Prost for the championship. So sure. Take that how you will. But yeah, it's still kind of true. If you are a racing driver and you see a gap and you think, oh no, I'm not going to go for that, then you've lost it. You haven't got it anymore. Formula One's left you and it's over.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
But on that first lap, I think this race was such a good testament to what incredible drivers both Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton are, because they started so far back on the grid and were able to gain so many positions and finish on the top, in the top five. And it just makes you think what kind of race we would have had on our hands if they had been able to qualify in the top of the grid.
Yeah, right? I mean, from Leclerc's side of things, one, an incredible start, you know, getting up to what I think was P11 after the first lap, eighth after maybe a couple of laps. Amazing move around the outside, going into the chicane, overtaking three cars, which sometimes is such a risky move because we saw what happened between Bottas and Perez. It can so easily happen where the collisions happen and it throws you out of the corner to the outside rather than spinning someone to the inside. So incredibly lucky, but great car placement, and saw the gap, went for it. Brilliant from him. But yeah, I think Leclerc was very disappointed by the end of the race because he felt like he probably had the pace to maybe go and catch up to Lando. Maybe he did.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't. Maybe Lando was just, you know, managing so well, not putting himself under too much pressure and pushing so hard, making those mistakes. Kind of like we saw, remember back to Singapore, where the gap was just increasing by such a large amount. But we did see Lando make a few mistakes and got lucky to not crash out of the Singapore Grand Prix. So maybe was just relaxing, managing that gap of 5 seconds between him and Carlos Sainz. And there's a few people out there that say, oh, well, you know, Carlos, this is why Carlos is the right one to leave, because I feel like he could have attacked Lando and he could have gone for it. I generally don't think that from his side of the garage, he could have. I think he did everything he could to try and catch up, especially just after the pit stop phase, but unfortunately didn't have it. Maybe Charles Leclerc got more out of that car over the weekend and had the better potential to maybe hunt him down. It's one of those things that we'll never know. That's Formula One, sadly, for us. Sometimes you're going to get hit with these penalties and get unlucky that you've got to make this change, but it was better for them to make that change and hope that Leclerc could get back through the field and they could take something off of McLaren rather than risk it and keep that component in there and risk, of course, breaking down in a position where they could have been leading the championship. Both are gambles. They went for that gamble. It didn't pay off. Maybe the other one would have been better for them and the component would have held on. But it's something we will just never know.
And it was also interesting because so many of the commentators were saying, why did Charles Leclerc not just do a pit lane start where they could have completely redone the configuration of the car and gotten it exactly where they wanted to be? But instead, they chose to take the grid penalty and start on the grid, but he jumped from P19 to P8 within like the first lap or first two laps. It was just brilliant stuff. The positions he gained was like, it's out of a video game. The positions he gained that quickly, it was amazing. But moving on, lap two, Checo makes contact with Valtteri Bottas. He's out. Perez retires. Probably his last race with Red Bull. Not the way he wanted to go out. Not the way any of us wanted to see him go out.
Yeah.
That was a bummer. Lap six, Max is issued a 10-second penalty for that shunt with Oscar Piastri on the first turn. At this point, Leclerc's up to P7. Lap 10, Lando is in the lead with 3+ seconds. Pretty comfortable. Lap 13 is Lando Carlos, Pierre Gasly, Russell, and Leclerc will jump like 10 laps, just jump to lap 24. Sainz is closing in on Norris, but not enough. And he finally pits lap 26 to switch to hards. Also, lap 26, we see Liam Lawson leave the pit with the wheel mount fully attached. And I thought this was incredibly impressive that he was able to make a full lap and come back to the pit without the wheel coming off.
Yeah, and it didn't even look like the wheel was falling off or wobbling or anything like that. Like, you could see it as soon as he left the pit lane, a bit of sparks when they showed the slowdown shot. But yeah, when they said they cut to the radio and they showed him driving around, it was like, is it? Are they sure? Like, it doesn't look like it. And it doesn't look like he's, you know, driving around really, really slowly. So yeah, maybe it's just great car control to not put too much load in a situation that is going to chuck it off. Or maybe it was just tightened enough that it was going to last for a lap or so that they could then get it back in and, of course, tighten it back up. But yeah, unfortunate for him as well, because I think he was running in a good position, was ahead, of course, of Yuki Tsunoda at that point. Yuki had a terrible start, getting bogged down. And, you know, in this inter-team competition to try and have this shootout for a potential Red Bull seat, if it is true that Checo is going to be out, then he needs all the best results that he can, because Formula One, you're only really as good as your last race. Recency bias is a massive thing.
Yeah, for sure. But lap 27, Lando Norris pits. It is a 2.0-second pit stop. Super fast, super impressive from McLaren. Like, I know Oscar was further down the field, but in regards to Lando Norris's race and the pit crew just so efficiently running this pit stop, like, McLaren was running on all cylinders. Just really, really impressive stuff. Lap 28, Franco Colapinto retires. It was a bummer to see him end his race, especially because we don't know if he's ever going to be back in Formula One. You know, his stock was so high his first few races, and it's kind of taken a U-turn. So it was sad to see him leave the race.
Yeah, certainly so. Just a bit of a mistake, really, wasn't it? Just slamming it up the inside, lock up. He looked like he kind of turned, and then that kind of made the lock up worse as he turned left. And then just one of those, like, donk. Yeah, bit of a tough weekend for Bottas, because you had the amazing qualifying. You had the great qualifying and getting up into the top 10. And then you have, like, I think the race just went from bad to worse. The collision with Perez, and then, of course, the collision with Magnussen in exactly the same corner.
Yeah.
And he was one of the only drivers not to score points and wanting to finally get those points. And this could have been a race that maybe they could have scraped something. So, yeah, shame for him, but interesting to see what the future holds. There's rumours, of course, of the Mercedes reserve driver. There's rumours, of course, from the F1 shop that off to Red Bull for next season. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see what goes on there.
Yeah. Lap 30, Lawson ends up getting a 10-second penalty for leaving the pit with a screw loose. You know, of course, that was not his fault. Lap 32, Valtteri Bottas is out of the race after a crash with K-Mag. Bummer to see Valtteri end there, but you know, who knows? He might be back. We'll have to wait and see. But jumping back to lap 29, Hamilton's all the way up to P4, but he still needs to pit. And lap 33, at least I thought, and I think a lot of us thought, we might get a safety car due to debris on the track. And it felt like Hamilton and Mercedes were kind of fishing for a safety car, like on the radio. It's like they were trying to lobby for it, but which would have helped his race immensely. But we ended up not getting it, unfortunately. Yep. That would have been a nice sort of full circle karma, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. I think like with the safety car coming out, if it had come out at that point, they told him not too long before that we've got a piece of paper in hand that projects that we are going to finish P3 in this race, so just keep doing what you're doing. So then if that safety car came out, I was like, okay, maybe they actually are onto something, that, you know, a safety car comes out, of course they're going to be right up there. I don't think he would have really lost too much in terms of positions, maybe one or two, but would have been on a better set of tyres. And also it would depend on whether the other drivers around him would see that and go, okay, let's go back to mediums. I've got a set of mediums still. If a driver still had them, go to another set of mediums, go to the end. So therefore those drivers wouldn't overtake him in the pit stop, because they'd be making a pit stop of their own. So Yeah. We'll talk more about Hamilton because what a race from him as well. But yeah, very close. But I think with the debris, it just kind of got shot off to that runoff area that it wasn't really any sort of risk of running over, at least even going for an overtake, going side by side as well.
Yeah. Lap 35, it's Norris, Sainz, and Leclerc. Lap 36, Hamilton pits and switches to mediums. He is now down to P7. Lap 39, Magnussen sets fastest lap. It just seemed at this point he knew his race was kind of done. So he was trying to, like, similar to Daniel Ricciardo, set fastest lap as like a nice swan song. Early 40s, we see Norris continuing to extend his lead. By lap 43, he's up by 4.9 seconds. And then lap 44, Hamilton is in fifth behind his teammate George Russell, and he's like over 12 seconds behind him. And over the rest of the race, he starts closing the gap on Russell. You know, Toto on the radio said, you know, let's have a race each other clean. Ultimately, Lewis does pass him for P4. It becomes abundantly clear those last 10-ish laps that unless he makes a mistake, Lando's going to secure the constructors' title for McLaren. And race ends. We have Lando Norris P1, Carlos Sainz P2, Charles Leclerc P3, Hamilton P4, George Russell P5. Everybody is emotional. Everybody looks exhausted. This is the longest season in Formula One history. Mm-hmm. Banger of a season. But McLaren wins the constructors' title with, I believe, the youngest driver pairing on the grid, which is incredibly impressive. Piastri is the first non-champion to complete every lap in a Formula One season. Very impressive.
Yeah. Nearly lost that, though, because he nearly went a lap down to Lando in that final race. Because there was a shot of both of them together, and it was once Oscar got past Albon, then he was kind of clear. Whether Lando was sort of not trying to push, of course, as well, as we said earlier, to maybe gave Piastri a bit more breathing room for that. But yeah, very, very close between those two. Nearly didn't happen, but fantastic achievement. I want to come back to the Lewis Hamilton thing. An amazing, amazing overtake around the outside for P4. Overtake complete, so to speak, because if we remember back to 2021, he had that run on Max. He was on the outside at that corner, but because he was on the old tyres, couldn't hang it around the outside. Max with the better grip, the inside line, was always going to hold on to it. Whereas for now, this time, Lewis Hamilton on the final lap of the race was able to pull off the overtake there. There was talk and there's conspiracies around that car over this weekend and the Mercedes team. Now, I think a lot of people have been weighing up that the cars have been different over the season, apart from maybe in the mid stage of the season where Hamilton was getting some really strong results. There was a team radio to George from Toto that was just like, thank you for everything this weekend on the car and the setup. And it's suspected that they switched cars for this weekend, which,
what?
Looking at the pace of Hamilton's side of the garage compared to George, he had great free practice running. Unfortunately, got caught out by that bollard, so we will never get to see what he could have done in qualifying and where he could have been. But it is interesting, and you know, this is not something that's unusual. We know that if a driver's on the way out, if there's updates and there's only enough to give it to one car, your number one driver, your driver that's staying there, the one that's going to be the future, is of course the driver you're going to give it to. We've seen that before. Look at Ferrari in 2020 when Sebastian Vettel had his last season, was already announced that he was leaving the team. Charles Leclerc's car and the performance difference between those two drivers was way more than just the driver ability at that stage of their careers. I think it was also down to the fact that Vettel was leaving. Leclerc had the updates first. Because sometimes you only have one set of updates available, so you're going to give it to that one driver. We see, of course, with Alpine that the cars are massively different between Gasly and firstly Ocon side of the garage, now Doohan. Inherited the basically the slowest car on the grid for this race. Yep. So, yeah, I think, do you know what? Completely fair. Final race of the season. They want to end it on a high. They don't want any bad blood between both parties. And they want to give Lewis the best opportunity to have the best race possible. Not because they, you know, they were handing him the position over Russell. I think he still had to work for it and he still had to make that overtake. But it's interesting if it's true. And I do kind of believe it, looking at the performance difference this weekend mm-hmm. compared to maybe the last couple.
Yeah, absolutely. But incredibly emotional ending for Lewis Hamilton. I know he chose not to be interviewed by the broadcast. He was supposed to be interviewed by Terry Crews after Nico Rosberg interviewed the drivers on the podium. And I think he just wanted to sort of be in the moment and spend time with teammates. I know he, once he took that time next to the car, which I thought was just like a lovely moment. I know he was spending a lot of time with Bono and talking and posing for photos and whatnot. And also, I saw this stat. I did not totally fact check it, but I believe as teammates, George Russell and Lewis Hamilton were even on points
going into the race. Career,
going
into the race, yeah. Lewis yeah. did eventually beat him
of course,
over 3 years
yeah.
together. But yeah, going into it. So it was a lot on the line, of course, between those two and that final overtake.
Yeah, which I thought was so interesting. But it's going to be, while I'm very excited for Lewis Hamilton to go to Ferrari, I think it's one of the most exciting things to happen for Formula One in the last few years. It's going to be very strange to not see him in a Mercedes. And yes. It's so interesting to think back. I mean, I was not a Formula One fan then, but like when I look at the history of F1 and I look at his decision to leave McLaren
mm-hmm.
to go to Mercedes and what a shock that was
yes.
in the world of motorsport. People like thought he was making a huge mistake going to this team that like was unproven, mm-hmm. was relatively new because it was, yeah. you know, Braun, then became Mercedes. It was a relatively new outfit. And a lot of people just had no confidence or optimism in his decision to go there. A lot of people thought it was a big mistake. And it turned out being one of the most dominant runs in Formula One history, totally dominating the turbo hybrid era. And so I he has his reasons for leaving and, you know, there were good reasons and it, you know, a lot of times it's business and marketing, but emotionally it must be very hard for him to walk away from Mercedes.
Yeah, this weekend made me realize that I am not ready for when Lewis announces his retirement. Because whilst we knew it wasn't a retirement, we're going to see him there. It in a way kind of felt a little bit like that in what was going on in terms of shown on the TV, shown mm-hmm. by Mercedes and what they were doing and all the talk about it. It's an end of an era, of course. But yeah, it was emotional. And whilst I didn't cry for this one, because I know he's still going to be there, I think I might probably cry when he retires from Formula One, because for me, I've always been a fan of Formula One since I was a kid. Michael Schumacher days, as I say, I walked into the room when my parents were watching and was always asked if Schumacher was winning, but wasn't always watching the races. Then I think 2007 over in the UK, there was a big bit more of a boom for the casual fans of Formula One and the excitement of getting people back into Formula One because there's this hotshot rookie on the scene, very similar to Max when he jumped into Formula One and then moved to the Netherlands, moved to the Red Bull team. The Netherlands had a strong affinity for Max Verstappen. I think there's a similarities between both of those. And then for me, of course, when it went to BBC 2009, that's when I really started to get into Formula One. So Lewis Hamilton's been a massive, massive part of that and a part of me enjoying Formula One. So yeah, and you're completely right. 2012, we all thought he was crazy. He's just left this team, 2012 McLaren, that were probably the best team in 2012, but reliability sucked. Like, the worst team for reliability was terrible. But in terms of performance, it was one of the best. And it's like you're going to Mercedes, who, yeah, okay, they've just won a race, but their reliability isn't great either. And, you know, Michael Schumacher had a lot of issues with that car that probably should have done a lot better that season because of the issues of the car and the team. But it was a risk, and the projection that they had from 2014 with the engine was enough to sway him the other way, and boy did it work. Boy did it work. And who knows, maybe he is going to pull off an absolute banger again moving to Ferrari, because Ferrari are looking good. McLaren could get it absolutely spot on and could run away with it next season. I hope not, because then we've got a boring end to these regulations before we go into the new ones. But they could get things spot on in 2026, that they become a dominating force. And, you know, he's only potentially got one person to go up against if it's just him and Charles Leclerc that are in a strong car, like Max has been in the strong car with Red Bull. So he could get it spot on. But yeah, was emotional. I'm not ready for that retirement. Fingers crossed, it's quite a few years away.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And it just was not just an emotional ending of the season for Lewis Hamilton. It was also very emotional for both Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz. I don't know if you've gotten an opportunity to listen to it yet, but this morning I listened to the radio from Charles Leclerc when he finished the race, just about how gutted he was that they were not able to secure the constructors' title over McLaren. And you could hear in his voice, like his voice was breaking, was cracking. Yeah. And you could hear how desperately not only he wanted to win the constructors' title for the team, but also for the fans, but he also like wanted to win it for his teammate Carlos Sainz. And you could hear in his voice how much he was going to miss Carlos Sainz as a teammate and as a friend. And yes, they're going to be, and he's just going to be down in another garage, but I feel like their driver pairing, they had an incredibly special connection. Mm-hmm. And were perfect teammates together.
Yeah,
they were a perfect driver pairing. And if Lewis had not chosen to leave Mercedes for Ferrari, I could have seen them driving for the Scuderia for another 5 to 7 years together.
Yeah, yeah, certainly so. I think, you know, and I think there was an interview that you said that as soon as it was announced that it was Hamilton, he completely understood. Or like he said, if there was any other driver on the grid, he would be like, would not understand and would take him a while to understand and would question it. But because it's Lewis Hamilton, he completely understands it. And I think he's done really well in this last season to not necessarily burn any bridges. And we've seen that. We spoke about it early with teams favoring the driver that's staying over the driver that's leaving. I don't think that's necessarily been the case for Ferrari. They've given both drivers equal opportunity to go for victories, to push as hard as possible. They could have easily gone for their chosen Ferrari child, which is Charles Leclerc, give him everything, and Sainz is just in the mud like they had it in 2020. But no, you know, they gave Sainz everything. He didn't burn bridges with the team either. And say Lewis Hamilton goes to Ferrari and he gets beaten. He gets absolutely spanked by Charles Leclerc in the first season and goes, you know what? I'm retiring. I don't want to do this anymore. I can't see myself staying. I'm going to go out. Then they will happily bring back Carlos Sainz. And if things aren't working at Williams and there's not a clear trajectory that things can get back up to the top, because boy, I would love that. I would love if Williams can get back up to the front with Carlos Sainz. But if there's not clear pathway that's going to happen, then he will with open arms come back to Ferrari. And I think it is a possibility, if Williams aren't good, that he could go back there.
And I have no idea like how he feels privately, but at least in the public eye, Carlos Sainz has had nothing but incredible things to say about driving for Ferrari. He says there is nothing better than driving for Ferrari in Formula One. I believe I'm paraphrasing what he said, but you also saw like Charles Leclerc's body language after finishing the race, how gutted he was. He really wanted this win, and it just, you know, he was already like on the back foot, you know, with his lap time to lead and starting in the back of the grid. and wasn't going to be able to put up a fight with McLaren unless Lando made a mistake, which he didn't. And so, yeah, it was hard to watch, but it was an incredible season, and you have to tip your hat to McLaren and what they were able to accomplish. And I know we've talked about it in other episodes, but to see how far they've come from where they were in 2015, 2016, yeah. but as early as the beginning 22. Of the 2023 calendar,
yeah,
where they were
as well,
at the back of the grid, and Lando was, they were talking about Lando maybe leaving to go to a more competitive team because they were so bad. And you see where they are now. They've come so far. They should all be so proud of how far they've come and the work they've put into, because McLaren has been absolutely unbelievable this season.
Yeah, fully agree with you there. And the changes that have been made, changing the trajectory of the team, the overall philosophy of the car is a big thing to do. You know, it's a big risk, because then you feel like you're always playing catch up, and it could have easily been that they went a certain way with Red Bull, for example, copied Red Bull, and therefore were always copying Red Bull up until we changed regulations. But no, they've managed to surpass. They are the best team in Formula One in terms of all-round performance. There are a few weekends, I think, with the low downforce circuits, especially since they took away that sort of mini DRS that they had in Azerbaijan, that was a huge benefit, of course, to Oscar Piastri when he was defending from Charles Leclerc. Since those races onwards, they've struggled in terms of straight line speed, and that is something that they do need to work on to have that all-round best team, and maybe something that the other teams will look to try and capitalize on those low downforce circuits. And they've obviously got other things that they need to improve on to beat McLaren, but McLaren are the team to beat, and they are that, not just being the constructors champions but also being the best car out there. But, and it is a but, their drivers have made mistakes this season. Whether that be in qualifying, whether that be in the race. And I think Lando has had an incredible learning year, which I think every driver needs to go through. And it's difficult to, especially if you look at where the car's been, they've never really been a challenger. Maybe the second half of 23, you could say that car was a challenger, but not for race wins. It was a challenger for podiums. This year has been a challenger where you're up at the front. How do you deal with that pressure? Do you run away? But then you potentially make mistakes. Look at Singapore. We talked about it. Made mistakes. Nearly put the car in the wall because of it. I think this race was a perfect race. No mistakes that I saw out on track. Great qualifying session. Handled things comfortably at the front. Didn't drive away too much like we have seen in the past. And managed it really, really well. And he said at the end of that, the race on the radio, next year is my year. Quite possibly could be. It quite possibly could be. But you've also got to watch out on the other side of the garage that Oscar Piastri will only be in his third season. He's got a lot of learning to do, and he's had a big learning year as well. But how quickly is he going to learn compared to Lando Norris? Who's going to be able to handle that pressure better? It's going to be an exciting season, I hope, 2025. And if it does end up being a McLaren-only dominance era for this year, then I think we're at least in good company with Oscar Piastri versus Lando Norris being a exciting prospect and challenge across the season. But of course, I think as Formula One fans, we're all hoping for the Ferraris, the Mercedes, and the Red Bulls also to get involved as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I also thought it was a really nice moment, and you probably saw it on Ferrari's socials. It was an amazing moment between the McLaren and Ferrari team members, all just sort of embracing each other and congratulating each other on a well-fought season. I think that was a really nice reminder that, all these teams compete with each other, but a lot of these team members, regardless of what team you're on, know each other very well. And they're all sort of, I think what we often forget is this sport is entertainment. It's like a really fancy traveling circus.
Yeah.
And they travel all over the world to put on a show to entertain people. And even though they're competing against one another, they're also working together often. And I just thought it was a really nice moment.
Yeah, it's crazy how massively Formula One has changed. And maybe it's always been like this. But you know, since obviously Liberty Media coming in, opening up how much is filmed in the pit lane, etc., you get more of an insight into how the teams are. But I do think it is a mentality change that has happened over recent seasons, and it is something that is honestly really great to see, the respect up and down the field for each other, that both teams are hugging each other. Whereas if you go back to the 90s, Ron Dennis would not allow that at all. I mean, he would throw his toys out the pram if any member of the team went to Ferrari, because they were the bitter rivals. You don't go to Ferrari. We are McLaren. You go anywhere else but go to Ferrari, because we do not support each of those teams. And now you have these two teams hugging. Ron Dennis will be watching that at home, throwing up. He would be throwing up. He would have turned off his TV and been like, Formula One is dead, because that's how he ran things, and maybe quite a lot of other teams were run like that as well. But I think for me personally, it was just great to see the love, and most importantly, as I said, the respect, that the Ferrari mechanics can look at that and say, do you know what? You've had a fantastic season. Congratulations. But the McLaren mechanics aren't just like, hey, unlucky, we're winners. No, you've had a fantastic season as well. You made us run for it very, very close to the line. And it's been an enjoyable season, and I can't wait to see you lot next year and see what we can do.
Yeah, for sure. I think these a lot of these teams have relationships and connections with one another way more so than we see in the broadcasts and portrayed on social media. Like, I was talking to a friend who works in motorsport, and they were telling me, just as an example, like the spare parts coordinators on all the teams, like, are constantly during the calendar messaging each other. Like, if a team is missing something, like, they're all on like a chain together, like, helping each other out. Like, oh, we're missing XYZ. Does anybody have a spare that we can like use for this weekend?
Yeah.
Because ultimately we all got to put on this show. And if a team isn't able to get their car out and be able to perform, everybody suffers. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was such an interesting insight, where they were like, listen, we're all just trying to put on a show. We're all just trying to entertain people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that sort of changed my perspective on what it's like to work in the sport. Because while it is a competition, we're also just trying to entertain the masses.
Yeah. And I think they all want to beat the best of the best. They don't want to see another team not make the grid or have a mistake, because whilst it's easy points to pick up and they can be important points, ultimately you want to beat them in a head-to-head. And I think that's for the drivers as well. They don't, like, Lando wouldn't have wanted to see Max DNF out of every single race in the last four to give him an easy run-in for the championship and an easier comeback. He would have much rather, you know, fought tooth and nail every single race with Max, overtaken him, beaten him in all the lead-up races to the end, and that's how he would have won the championship. And I think, that's what it comes down to. They're always going to be happy to help out, you know, whether it's just a fan using a leaf blower to cool down a competitor's car because their mechanics are down the other end of the grid when they're parked in the weighbridge. You know, those little things like that are great to see.
Yeah. A few footnotes to this weekend. Pierre Gasly finished the season with zero damage to his car.
Yeah, crazy.
Unbelievably impressive.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Not only was he in like great form second half of the season and was able to pull off incredible qualifying times and performances in race with that Alpine, zero damage to your car is so impressive.
Yeah, I think it's like zero damage caused by him. Because, of course, the car did blow up in Vegas, but that wasn't caused by him. So if anyone's at home being like, what's James on about? He's had this or that. No, the instance that those ones, for example, I don't know if he got any damage for Monaco, if you remember when him and Ocon came together. But if he did, that we all saw was Ocon's fault, you know, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was responsible for $0 worth of damage to the car.
Yeah, so if anyone's at home calling out, no, all right, no, James is right, okay? He did have
also,
$0.
I don't know if this is 100% true, but it seems like Esteban Ocon was omitted from the Alpine team picture in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one because it's kind of like, I don't know, I think you do say to yourself, oh, come on, like, just allow him in. Just allow him in the team photo. He's worked hard. But if his contract is up at that point, I mean, do you go to an employer's that you've left for the end of year picture? I don't know.
But he was there the entire season.
Exactly. I know he was there the entire season. It also depends on whether he wants to be there as well. I think, you know, he was spotted having chats with Komatsu, with Haas. And I think for him, you know, I'm really impressed with him. I'm really impressed with Sainz as well, that whilst they've been omitted from these teams, they are eager for their next chapter and are getting their foot in the door. You know, Sainz today, we'd film this on the Monday, this podcast. Sainz today has already been doing a filming day with Williams. He's already getting his foot in the door. Like, that contract with Ferrari is up, and he's now already a Williams employee, and he is trying to take everything he knows from Ferrari to make Williams good again and get them towards the front of the grid. And that's what he's eager for. You know, Esteban Ocon is looking at where Haas are, and it's sort of, if you look at where the two teams are, it's a sideways step at the end of the season. Yeah. I say Alpine and Haas were very similarly matched. Maybe Alpine just had the slight edge over
Haas.
It's
a lateral move for sure.
Yeah, so he's looking at that thinking like, okay, I've been kicked out of this one, but there's still a great opportunity to be a front-running midfield team that, you know, has ambitions. And they've just recently been, you know, had that partnership with Toyota that we've speculated that maybe Toyota will take over the team completely and Haas will pull out, which could be a very exciting prospect. And maybe that's conversations that Esteban Ocon has heard, that, do you know what? We are going to be a works team. We're going to be a Toyota team. You're going to be a Toyota ambassador and all this. And he's like, okay, cool, get me in. I want to be doing as much as possible as soon as possible.
Also, before we go into this, and we could talk about this a little more later in the week, have you seen the rumor that, and this is just a rumor, it's just gossip, there's, I cannot stress that enough, that this is a rumor, that there are talks of possibly swapping Carlos Sainz and Kimi Antonelli.
What, with Mercedes?
Yeah, with Mercedes and Williams.
I can't say I've heard this rumor. I believe Sainz has something in his contract, and this again is something that is rumoured, that is, if a bigger team comes knocking, then Carlos Sainz will go walking, and he will be off to whatever team that offers.
I will say, if this rumour is true, it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I'm assuming it makes sense to you, because if Kimi doesn't perform well in a rookie season, then Mercedes has a backup option to take up Sainz, who is, I think we can all agree, a established driver and someone that you know what you're going to get with.
I say it makes a lot of sense, because you put Kimi Antonelli in a Williams and the stakes are much lower for him. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, right now in its current form, driving in a Williams, your expectations aren't as great. But driving in a Mercedes, even though they weren't competing for the constructor's title this year, they still very much were a top four team. And they were still securing a lot of podiums, and in certain races, they were like outperforming all the other cars. So I feel like, you know, similar to what they did with George Russell, like, you know, he spent what, 3 seasons at Williams. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you thrust a kid that young into a top 4 team when you could give them a season or two, in a midfield team? I mean, Charles Leclerc was at Alfa Romeo or Sauber before he went to Ferrari. You know, Max started at Toro Rosso. Like, like, why would you not, if you had that option, why would you not take it?
Yeah. I think it all depends on whether they have that option. Of course, the relationship between Williams and Mercedes, I assume that there'd be some sort of conversations, if that were to be true, that there's an engine deal in there, of course.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to sweeten things up by giving you a cheaper engine. And for Williams, you know, a team that are, wouldn't say as financially strapped as they have been in 5 years ago when there was no cost cap. Cost cap is definitely helping them. But with the damages that they've had this year, they're not going to say no to less money, are they? No one in any business is going to say, do you know what? Keep your money. Like, they will consider it, and they will consider that option. But it just depends on, with James Vowles, what they are looking to do. And I know that they are scrapping 2025. They don't care about 2025. 2026 is the goal. Okay, 2026 with the new regulations is the goal. The board are on board with it. The sponsors are on board with it. The team's on board with it. The drivers are on board with it. And I think with Sainz, he knows that as well. And I think that's why he's going to Williams, to be like, you're going to have one of the worst years after competing for race wins with Ferrari, but fingers crossed we get things right for 2026. We're moving in the right direction. And this might be something that could, you know, settle Sainz with Mercedes, of course, to keep him at a top team. But then you would lose out as Williams from the experience he's had at Ferrari and the information that he knows from driving a top team at the front. Albon, great driver. Drove in a Red Bull in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Carlos Sainz drove in a Ferrari that just missed out on the Constructors' Championship last year. I think Williams would get much more out of keeping Carlos Sainz than having a bit of a discount on the engines and taking on Kimi Antonelli, who could potentially crash the car quite a lot, which they really, really don't need after this season.
I will say, though, and I know this is a dangerous word to say, but I'm referencing a Claire Williams interview that I recently saw. It does feel like Williams in its current form and their current financial situation, how they've survived, is, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to use this word. It's a dirty word. More or less, they've had always had a pay driver on their roster.
Yeah,
I mean, they had it in the form of Latifi. They had it in the form of Lance Stroll. In some way, shape, or form, you could say Logan Sargeant was that with his connection to Doralton Capital and also any sort of sponsorships or exposure to the American audience that he brought. You could, you know, while Franco Colapinto is a great driver, you could say that his connection with Globant, which is a which is a global partner for Formula One, had something to do with him going to that seat, even though he was a Williams Academy driver. If it makes sense to see Kimi Antonelli in a Williams seat, if Mercedes is giving them a deal on the power units, because it helps their bottom line.
But you're also forgetting that every driver is some sort of pay driver. Carlos Sainz comes with Estrella. He comes with Santander. And Santander has already announced today that they're signing with Williams. They are going to be a sponsor with Williams. So they are getting still money from that. But I think as well with the cost cap, it's less reliant. We are going to see less of those, you know, full-on pay drivers. I'm talking like Nikita Mazepin. I'm talking Nicholas Latifi. Whilst they are capable drivers, like they're not terrible. You put me and Nicholas Latifi in a go-kart and he will wipe the floor with me, right? But compared to the caliber of Formula One and being the so-called best of the best, we are slowly going to eke out those pay drivers, with exception, I'd say, Lance Stroll, who, of course, we all
know. Who you love, by the way.
Who I do love. But, you know, I think it's, I will happily admit that, you know, there's no shame in that, in admitting that I think that he is, of course, helped massively by where he's come from, and having his dad own a team is an easy way to get in a team. But I think it's also a hindrance for him because there's less pressure. There's less there's less risk of losing your seat, which I think makes quite a lot of drivers as well. Lando Norris comes from a very rich background and has been helped massively throughout his career through his dad. But he's also been able to back it up with great performances. That's why people don't look at him saying you're just a paid driver. But I mean drivers who you question their ability and you think maybe they shouldn't really be on the grid because they haven't quite had the strong performances, but they bring a heap load of money that a back marketing would be like, okay, great, we need the money, we'll take you on. A lot of teams, in all fairness now, owning a Formula One team is a net gain. You know, they don't lose money anymore because of the cost cap. So F1 is changing in that sort of sense.
Yeah, interesting. So, Hayden, we officially have completed the longest season in Formula One history, 24 races on the calendar. Absolute banger of a season.
Yeah.
I know I'm a newer fan, but just from like looking at the history of Formula One in the last 20 seasons, like this has to go down as one of the best seasons in the last few decades, right?
Yeah, I think this will be looked back at in the history books as a incredibly underrated season that you'll be talking in a group of friends and you'll be like, oh, what was the best season? People are like, oh yeah, 2021 for me. Oh, 2012 was a great season. Who knows, 25, what happens next year? That was the best season. And then someone will just go, actually, I think 2024 was a great season. They'll be like, what are you on about? And then you start to go through and be like, well, we had six different race winners in six different races. We had, you know, six different multiple race winners, I think it was, or maybe it was seven.
seven race winners, seven multiple from four constructors. Yeah.
Seven multiple race winners. And this season won't go down as one of the all-time best because it was, and I think we can all agree that it was missing one thing, and that was a back-and-forth championship battle. There was always a tease of a championship battle. There was conversation of it, but the gap was always too far stretched that, you know, the Verstappen fans could always sort of push it down by being like, it's not going to happen. Like, are you worried about Lando coming? No, we're not worried. The gap's far too big. And it was a comfortable situation. And I think that's the only thing this season was missing. If this season had a back-and-forth championship battle, oh my days, yes, it would have been one of the best because every race, or at least the majority of races, were thoroughly enjoyable. I think the first half of the season, not first half, first, I don't know, sixth of the season, a handful of races at the start were a little bit slow. It was a slow burner, but boy, was it worth it in the end. And we said it on the last podcast that this was the reward for the loyalist fans that watched every race in 2023, that watched through all the qualifying, all the practice sessions, kept up with the sport. And that's why we do it. That is why we follow this sport and we love it so much. Because, yeah, we get boring seasons. We get absolute stinkers and domination like 2023 or, you know, 2013 with Red Bull dominating with Vettel. Or you look at the Lewis domination years of 2019. Mm-hmm. But then once you go through those, you get rewarded with some of the greatest racing, some of the greatest on-track action. And we've had that this season. And I so hope that we can continue this trajectory and carry it on through 2025. Because if that is true, oh, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it. And I'm excited for it to go to next season.
From your lips to God's ears.
And that is where we're going to wrap up today's podcast. We will have another podcast later on in the week. And we'll be filling all the way through the off season as well. But we're going to be talking more about the season as a whole and our thoughts on it, and also some of your thoughts. If you would like to get your thoughts in, make sure you head over to our Twitter. You go check out one of the WTF1 official tweets and get your thoughts in there on what have been your best moments of the season. We will pick out a handful of them and talk about them on the next podcast. Follow on whatever audio platform you are currently listening to at the moment. And make sure you check out, of course, as I say, the WTF on socials, all the latest gossip and news. We've got a couple of tests going on tomorrow and Wednesday with the young drivers test and also a tyre test going on as well. So there'll be a lot to follow on and to talk about, of course, in the next podcast as well. But for now, we will see you on the next one. Have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Bye.